Pro Football Weekly Podcast is back. What's going on, everyone? I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, and appreciative, as always, that you are back and have chosen to spend your time with me this week. And it's a big week at PFW. Our offseason has officially started. I know what you're thinking, Arthur. It's the second week in May. What are you talking about? Well, there really isn't an offseason, as any of my NFL media brethren will explain to you, but the closest thing we have to one has officially begun, because we just put both of our summer magazines to bed, the 2017 Preview, 2017 Fantasy Mags, currently at the printer and will be on newsstands later this month. You can purchase them even sooner at our website, profootballweekly.com. So really excited for that, not only because there's great content in those mags, we can't wait for you to be able to kind of get your hands on them, but also because we're free now to work on some other projects. And with the draft in the rearview mirror and both of these summer magazines now done, it frees us up. And as it pertains to you and this pod specifically, what it means is that I'm going to be coming at you more frequently again. I have a plan in place. My hope is to recap the off seasons for all 32 teams. That will be starting on today's podcast when we talk to Cleveland.com's Mary Kay Cabot and Pro Football Weekly's very own Kevin Fishbane to review the off seasons for the Browns and the Bears. I'm going to go in draft order. I'm planning on getting two beat writers per week, and if everything goes according to plan, this should take us up right into the preseason, and we'll get you guys set up heading into the year with everything that you need to know about all 32 clubs. So looking forward to doing that, but don't worry, it's not going to prevent us from reacting to other big news as it does pop up across the NFL. Some big items this week. Actually, just as I'm taping here on Thursday, the Cardinals have released linebacker Darrell Washington. Of course, Washington had been suspended, hasn't really played a full season, I don't believe, since 2013. He's going to be 30 years old, and Arizona, having just drafted Hassan Reddick and with their defensive transformation underway, has opted to let Washington try and resume his career elsewhere. So all I can tell you is that in his prime, he was one of the more feared defenders in the entire NFL, put up video game numbers, I believe, in his second season. I think it was 2012. But again, it's been so long since he has made an impact on the field that I would imagine it's a real long shot for him to get his career rebooted. And that doesn't mean someone won't give him a chance. I think they probably will. We'll just have to wait and see who it is. But that's one big bit of news. The other big bit of suspension and or reinstatement news actually comes out of Cleveland, and I'm going to let Mary Kay talk about that in a few minutes. But Josh Gordon has had his reinstatement turned down once again. So I'll let her explain what that means for the Browns' once promising star wide receiver. The other big bits of news, the NFL has found its replacement for Dean Blandino. It's going to be Alberto Riveron is the new head of officiating. So he's been doing this for almost 10 years, and it's a thankless job, of course, but a big one in the NFL. This is a big hire, of course, with all the scrutiny on the officials, and of course with replay heading to be centralized, that big change this year. So the best of luck to Riveron, and we'll see what he's able to do as he's kind of puts his staff together. Other news, the Patriots put a free agent tender on LeGarrette Blount Wednesday. If you haven't heard of this free agent tender, don't worry, most in the media hadn't either. It means that teams hoping to sign Blount without having it affect their 2018 compensatory formula, well, that's not going to happen. He's protected in that regard by the Patriots. If he doesn't sign elsewhere by, I believe it's July 22nd, he will play under that tender, the one-year tender in New England at $1.1 million. I believe he can earn up to just over $2 million with incentives. But remember, the Patriots have been collecting running backs this year, and when they signed the Bills' restricted free agent Mike Gillisley, we all assumed it kind of was the unofficial signal of Blount's New England exit. But now we'll have to wait and see, because again, teams really value these compensatory picks, and if they thought that Blount was going to be a cheap option for those that still had backfield questions after the draft, well, we're not so sure about that anymore. And it's just another fascinating move by Bill Belichick, who shows time and again that, you know, human emotion and sentiment is not a part of his business decisions. So I have a kind of a fun slideshow at ProFootballWeekly.com up right now, just going over some of the more stunning personnel moves throughout Bill Belichick's tenure in New England. And certainly LeGarrette Blount kind of factors into that equation now, too. So that's enough rambling from me. Let's talk Cleveland Browns with Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com. And next up on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, so pleased to be joined by Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com, who covers the Browns so wonderfully and has been doing so for a while. Mary Kay, thanks for taking time out of I know what's turned into a busy Thursday for you to join the program.
Oh, thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Of course. The pleasure's all ours. And I do want to spend most of our time recapping the Browns offseason, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask. Well, I'll let you break the news. Tell us what the newest development is on Josh Gordon and what it means for the Browns.
Well, his reinstatement was denied, and now he can reapply again in the fall. I tried to get some kind of a timetable on when exactly that might be, but, you know, obviously it'll be sometime probably September, October, somewhere around there. And then at that point, if he is reinstated, then the Browns will have to make a decision if, you know, if they want to, you know, have him back on the team and try to get him back up and running again. It's been a long, long time since he's played any real football. It's been about 29 months now since the end of December in 2014 now. I can't believe it's been so long, but it has, and now they have some big decisions to make possibly coming up in the fall.
And Mary Kay, do you think that the door was still open a crack prior to Thursday's news? Do you think this changes anything? I know that Sashi Brown has not really fully endorsed the idea of Gordon returning when he's been asked about it.
Well, he actually did open the door a crack in March, which I was a little bit surprised about, because when Josh Gordon when he left here in September, you know, Hugh Jackson was all about, you know, we're not talking about this anymore. We're closing the door on this chapter. And, you know, I was told that, that he meant, you know, we are closing the door for good. We gave this guy another chance. But you know what? Things change. Circumstances change. People change. And, you know, I do kind of think now if, you know, if it's good enough for the NFL to let him back in and give him another chance, that, you know, I think there is a possibility that the Browns would give him another go.
Okay, interesting stuff. We're chatting with Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com. Make sure you're following her on Twitter, at Mary Kay Cabot. And let me just tee it up this way. Coming off a 1-15 season, you wouldn't expect there to be a lot of positive vibes coming from Cleveland, and yet I can't remember another recent offseason where they've been more roundly praised. Tell me I'm wrong on that, or what's sort of your assessment of what's been a really wild offseason in Cleveland?
Well, you know, I do remember back to 2012 when the Browns drafted Trent Richardson and Brandon Weeden, and I think there was, you know, similar optimism back then. You know, I really think people were extremely excited about the football team and thought that those two guys could really help transform the team. So, you know, it reminds me a little bit of that year, although things are different now. You know, they have made 24 draft picks in the last two drafts, which is astounding, of course. And, you know, they added three first rounders this year. And, you know, I do think that there is this sense of, you know, the tide can turn pretty quickly as long as they get some good quarterback play.
Okay, well, that's a good segue. I certainly want to ask about Myles Garrett and Jabril Peppers and David Njoku, but everyone, especially Browns fans, I'm sure most concerned about that quarterback instability. It's been well documented. Your thoughts on DeShone Kizer, and can he turn into a nice consolation prize if the Browns really were hopeful to have landed Mitch Trubisky near the top of the draft as well?
Well, yeah, you know what? At number 52, I think it's a shot worth taking. I think it could be a consolation prize. You know, it's always so incredibly difficult to determine if a quarterback is going to be successful in the NFL. And sometimes when I think a guy will be, he's not, and vice versa. So, you know, it's really hard to say, you know, what he's going to turn into. But I will say that these guys are excited about the physical skills that he brings to the table. and about, you know, just the processing speed. And those things are important to Hugh Jackson. He's big on arm strength, the ability to be the face of a franchise, and your processing speed. And, you know, I think that Deshaun's going to come in here and he's going to give a really good battle to the other quarterbacks in training camp. And I think he will start games this year. I think he has to, because, you know, they've got 2 first-round picks next year and 3 second-round picks next year. So they need to know, do they need to spend some of those picks on a quarterback again, or do they have something here that they can really work with?
That's a great point and fascinating stuff. I feel like you're hearing a lot of, well, they're going to try and be as patient as possible with him, but this makes more sense to me. And our Pro Football Weekly draft expert, Greg Gabriel, longtime NFL scout, actually felt that DeShone Kizer was potentially the most ready to step in and play because he did do some pro-style things at Notre Dame. What do you think about the intangible side of it? Is that part of what led to seemingly a bit of a fall for DeShone into round 2? And what are the Browns saying if they have any concerns about that side of things?
Well, you know what? They haven't really expressed any concerns about those things yet. We start Browns. We head out for Browns mini camp tomorrow and then again on Saturday. So that's the rookie camp. So we'll have a better opportunity to kind of grill Hugh Jackson on some of these rookies that are coming in, and I'm sure we'll talk a lot about DeShone.
Right.
You know, they haven't really expressed any concerns over the character piece per se. You know, I don't really know if they are worried about some of the things that happened. I mean, I think that DeShone Kizer and Brian Kelly presented quite the united front on draft weekend, and I think that was good. I think Brian Kelly's tried to be pretty honest about his assessment of DeShone, but by the same time stands by him and, you know, hopes that he can be successful at this level and thinks he will be. So, I think that Hugh Jackson prides himself on being able to work with young quarterbacks. He's gotten other rookie quarterbacks ready to play before, including Cody Kessler last year, Joe Flacco as a rookie. So he has a track record of being able to get a rookie ready to play. And again, I think that you will see this rookie play just like those guys did.
Mary Kay, before we move on to the rest of the roster, a lot of interesting moves this offseason. Just sticking in the quarterback room for one moment, just your thoughts, and I know it's been a few months now, obviously, but your thoughts on the acquisition of Brock Osweiler and if that was purely a way to kind of purchase, if you will, another second-round pick, or if he's really a part of this upcoming competition as well.
Well, I think that the way that it started out was it was all about the second-round pick. Mm-hmm. That they got in that deal, and they were going to try to trade him. They were going to try to move him. This was not going to be about Brock Osweiler. But as time has gone on, you know, I think they probably did try to trade him and came to the conclusion that that's probably not going to happen at this time because of the $16 million guaranteed salary. Even if they assumed $10 million of that, you're still asking someone to pay $6 million, that's basically starting quarterback money or bridge quarterback money. You're going to have to put right. that guy out on the field. And if nobody wants that right now, they're not going to pay that kind of money for that. So, you know, unless somebody comes along and says, you know, we need a starting quarterback for, you know, $6 or $7 million a year, nobody's really going to trade for him. So now I think the narrative is changing on Brock Osweiler. Now it's starting to be, he's coming in here. He's doing everything that we've asked of him. He's going to have an opportunity to compete. So I think it's kind of stay tuned on the Brock Osweiler situation. I think if they could upgrade and find another veteran that they like better, maybe one that could even come in and start games for them at the beginning of the season, that they would try to do that. If it doesn't work out, they'll go with what they have.
Interesting stuff. And just quickly on a couple other of the veteran quarterbacks out there, there were rumblings that the Browns have consistently kicked the tires on a potential Jimmy Garoppolo trade. Of course, that was before landing Kizer. And then there was, I believe, one report, and I'm not sure if it was yours, I apologize, but a Kirk Cousins connection, I believe, draft weekend. Can you add any context to either of those pursuits, alleged pursuits, if you will, and if maybe one of them could still possibly be in the equation?
Well, it's my understanding that they did inquire about trading for Jimmy Garoppolo. And as we had been hearing all offseason, the Patriots you know, did not want to trade him, at least not at the price that the Browns were willing to pay. So I don't think that went very far. As far as Kirk Cousins, I had been saying all along that they weren't going to pursue Kirk Cousins, and they didn't. So they did not pursue him, but there was a report out there that they were trying to trade for him on draft weekend. That was an NFL Network report. But that was shot down pretty quickly, and that one didn't happen.
And then just lastly on the quarterback situation, I hate it that we've spent the half of our time together, but it is important. How involved was Jimmy Haslam into the interest or the pursuit of Mitch Trubisky? And was it more him? Was it more the front office? And if it was Haslam, how did he ultimately kind of save his team from himself, if you will?
Well, you know, Jimmy's very involved, and he should be involved. You know, I mean, he owns the football team, and he wants to be involved, and he has that right. So,
right.
But it's really more so from a staying on top of it, from staying plugged in to what everybody's doing, asking questions, challenging them. So he will, you know, he will get in there and, you know, question them and make sure that they know or feel that they're doing the right thing. But, you know, he's not ultimately going to pull the rug out from underneath Sashi Brown and go ahead and try to make a pick. So the buck stopped at Sashi Brown's desk when it came to picking Myles Garrett. You know, that, you know, Sashi Brown will be held accountable for that. Jimmy lends his input, but he's not going to go against what those guys choose to do.
Okay, and good segue. Let's talk about the number one overall pick, Myles Garrett, and what he brings to the table, Mary Kay. I know he's going to bring not only generational talent and just jaw-dropping athleticism, but it sounds like he's brought a little bit of an edge, too, and I'm guessing that's been a welcome addition to this locker room.
Well, you know what? It's interesting because he's talking big for a rookie. He's coming in. To the NFL, saying things like, I want to set the rookie sack record and the single season sack record and, you know, and exceed the greatness of a Jerry Rice and be thought of as the greatest player of all time. And, you know, those are big things to say. Then he talks about, you know, he can't wait to sack Tom Brady. He could be humbled, wants to chop down Ben Roethlisberger. So that's some fighting words, you know, as you come into the NFL. So I think, you know, we talked to Sashi Brown about that yesterday at a speech that he was at. He basically said, we're not scared of that kind of talk. We know some of it is, you know, taken out of context. The rest of it, he mixes in some levity with the bravado, and, you know, we're not afraid of it. And so, you know, although Greg Williams, I think, did have a chat with both Jabril Peppers and Myles Garrett to say, don't go down into your introductory press conference and write checks that you can't cash. So I think Myles will learn because, you know, Ben Roethlisberger already responded to, you know, him kind of calling him out a little bit. The Steelers will be ready for him, and he'll probably be pretty exhausted by 4 p.m. on the day of the opener.
Sure. And is the thought, Mary Kay, that maybe sort of the increasingly dynamic front seven that's being built, you've got now obviously Jamie Collins and Myles Garrett and Danny Shelton coming off a big year and some other big-time additions, Emmanuel Ogba looking to take a big step in his second season. Is the hope maybe that much like what they've built along the offensive line may mask an inexperienced quarterback? Are they hoping that this front seven is going to help maybe cover up some potential shortcomings in the secondary to help this defense compete right away?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they're really starting to build the kind of defense that you expect to see in the AFC North. You know, every time you go up against, you know, the Steelers or the Ravens or even the Bengals, you know, you really have a lot of guys that you have to circle in red and really kind of stay up worrying about game planning for. Now you're starting to have some of those kind of guys on the Browns defense, like you said, the Jamie Collins, the Danny Sheltons, the Emmanuel Ogbas, and now the Myles Garretts and Jabril Peppers. You know, guys that, you know, maybe someday you can, you know, buy their jersey and wear it proudly, and they'll strike some fear into the hearts of, you know, some of these AFC North quarterbacks. So I do think that that they're doing a great job of building that defensive front, and, you know, they are going to need it to, you know, maybe just kind of, you know, help mask some of the deficiencies in other areas. You know, the secondary is still kind of growing and learning and evolving. And, you know, that's an area that will benefit greatly from a much better pass rush this year.
And in that secondary, I do want to ask you about Jabril Peppers, too. But is there a belief, a hope that Joe Haden can regain his former Pro Bowl, I think maybe even All-Pro form? I know it's been a rough stretch for him since kind of reaching the peak of his career.
Yeah, you know, he had two groin surgeries in the offseason.
Okay.
And, you know, that's going to be, you know, a big deal for him. To try to come back from these and to stay healthy. Now, he played through a lot of pain last year, and, you know, and he needed to. Hugh Jackson needed him out there. So so he did that, and, you know, now it's just a matter of can he stay healthy and, you know, kind of get back to that Pro Bowl level. And I think he can as long as now he has resolved this issue.
Okay, and I know he's a real big positive force for the Browns in the locker room, too, so it'll be important to have him. What about Peppers? And Mary Kay, you did give us the caveat. I know you haven't seen these rookies on the field yet. You may not have a good idea about their plan, but I'll ask you anyway. Obviously, a lot of talk about Peppers potentially being a man without a position as he entered the draft, and then there was the whole diluted sample that maybe led to him falling a little bit. What does Peppers have to kind of prove early on as a rookie, whether it's on or off the field?
Well, you know, you mentioned the test first. You know, he comes in stage one of the NFL drug program. So the first thing he has to prove is that he's not going to have a misstep, that he's not going to have a, you know, a failed test or a positive test or any of those sorts of things. No more dilute samples or anything. He's got to stay squeaky clean on all of that, regardless of what it was. We have no idea, you know, if he was involved in anything other than drinking a lot of water or not. So, you know, I don't know if we'll ever know, you know, the real deal on any of that, but he just needs to make sure that he can stay out, get out of the program, get kicked out of that program, and, you know, and stay on the football field is the number one thing for him. And then he does have to establish that he can be their starting strong safety. That's what they want him to be. That's what they need him to be. Okay. They're looking for a dynamic player there that has good ball skills, that can take the ball away, get interceptions, and just be a real dominant force there.
Spending just a couple more minutes here with Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com. Make sure you're following her on Twitter at Mary Kay Cabot. And let's just cruise back to the offense quickly. I was so impressed with what they did along the offensive line, bringing in Kevin Zeitler and bringing in J.C. Tretter. Obviously, they have the best blocker in the NFL in Joe Thomas. Just kind of your thoughts about building up the front wall before maybe you have the guy that you hope to have stand behind it for the next 10 years and how maybe that will impact these young QBs as they try and, you know, put a stranglehold on the job.
Well, so important, as you saw in Dallas last year with, right, you know, what that paved the way for Dak Prescott to do, what that paved the way for Ezekiel Elliott to do. You know, what a great way to try to, you know, to build your offense is to invest in that offensive line. And if Joel Bitonio comes back healthy and strong from the Liz Frank surgery, you know, that will really, really help them on that left side of the line. And J.C. Tretter, he just has to stay healthy. He's missed 33 games over the last four seasons. And I ran into Mike McCarthy in the airport on the way home from the NFL league meetings. And he said, hey, if this young man can stay healthy, he's a Pro Bowl caliber center. So that can be really great for the Browns if he can do that. And then, like you said, Zeitler, you know, what a great addition he is on the other side. And then they just have to fix the right tackle spot, which is a very, very important position. And, you know, they have to get that one right.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then what about the guy running behind them? I believe this week Isaiah Crowell finally signed his restricted tender. He's coming off a breakout year. What's his ceiling look like now with this potentially dominant O-line in front of him, especially just showing what he did with not a lot of offensive continuity last year?
Yeah, and he's really still young. He's only 24 years old. So, you know, he's been around for a while, so you don't think of him as being that young. But he still is very young, and you know, still has a lot in the tank. And he lost some weight last year, and I thought he was running better. They ran into the issue of falling behind in games. He should have easily had 1,200, 1,300 yards, but they fell behind so much they had to abandon the run a lot. I think they'll make more of a renewed commitment to the run this year. It would be nice to see them wrap him up to a longer-term deal. You know, I think he's worth that. So hopefully they can get that figured out. But I also think they need to add to the running back pile a little bit.
Okay. Yep. Duke Johnson, they view really as just that change-up passing down guy. And, yeah, I would tend to agree they could obviously use a little bit more talent there, especially as they figure out the quarterback situation. Mary Kay, I've just got three questions on the way out for you. What's the most improved unit from your vantage point after what's been a really busy offseason in Cleveland?
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to say defensive line just because of Myles Garrett. If you're going to be calling him a generational pass rusher and the cornerstone type of player, and you pick him number one overall, you would have to say that that unit, the defensive line, would be your most improved unit overall.
That makes sense, and it'll be fun to see what he's able to bring out from Ogba on the other side, who I know did end up with, what, 5 sacks as a rookie. What about the biggest remaining flaw? I think I know what you're going to say, but what's the area of concern that kind of lingers after the offseason?
You know, I'm going to have to go quarterback here because they just don't know yet.
Right.
You know? I mean, they just don't know. I mean, who knows if, you know, can Hugh Jackson, the quarterback whisperer, get anything out of Brock Osweiler? Can Cody Kessler throw the ball downfield enough with enough accuracy and zing to make Hugh Jackson happy about playing him? Can DeShone Kizer step in there and start and maybe even win some games for them? Or do they have another trick up their sleeve that we don't even know about? So that's the position with the most questions.
Plenty of intrigue still, and I love the point you made at the top about with all this draft capital in 2018, maybe that pushes Kizer on the field a little bit earlier so they can find out. And then lastly, Mary Kay, for our fantasy football fans, is there one guy that you look at that maybe they can count on, or one sleeper that maybe people aren't thinking of? What's the most relevant fantasy football angle for the Cleveland Browns in 2017?
Well, I think a player to look at would be a David Njoku, their tight end that they got in the first round. Mm-hmm. They are going to use him in that deep passing game. And with the size and the speed and the athleticism that he has, he should be able to score some touchdowns, catch some touchdown passes down there in the red zone. So I would say he would be someone to watch.
Excellent. And, of course, with Gary Barnage now out of the equation, there should be an opportunity for David Njoku. So keep your eyes on him, fantasy football fans. That's all the time we have with Mary Kay Cabot. Mary Kay, I know how busy it is in Cleveland today, so we are just so appreciative of you taking time out to join the program, and we'd love to do it again somewhere down the road if you're willing.
Sure, we can do it, and thanks for having me.
All right, that is Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com. Make sure you are checking her out on Twitter, at Mary Kay Cabot. All right, awesome stuff once again from Mary Kay Cabot. One more huge thank you to her for taking time out of a super busy Thursday to join the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Before our next guest and my old pal Kevin Fishbane joins the program to talk Bears, let's talk quickly about Loot Crate. Guys, my Doc Brown Funko Pop, it seriously has been the talk of the office, and especially by the water cooler. You can't even go hydrate without hearing about it. So everyone wants to know where they can get theirs, and they're in luck, because I can tell you all about Loot Crate. It's the best surprise you know is coming, and coming this month is their new theme, Guardians. Whether you're a fan of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Star Wars, Destiny, Goonies, I mean, seriously, Goonies, that was like a childhood staple for me, so no doubt what I am most excited about and hopeful that that franchise, the Goonies franchise, will be featured on the t-shirt for this month. So there's all kinds of fun stuff in these crates, and last month the theme was Investigate, and my wife and I had just finished watching Stranger Things on Netflix, so to get such cool Stranger Things swag in my crate for April was pretty awesome. So if you're wondering how you're going to start getting yours, don't worry, I'm going to tell you right now. It's a $45 value. Actually, it's an over $45 value in every crate that Loot Crate sends out. You get it for less than $20 a month. You have until the 19th of this month at 9 p.m. Pacific to ensure, and ensure that you get the Guardians crate. So you don't want to wait, because when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. How do you get it? Head to lootcrate.com, www.lootcrate.com/Shaw, and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. Guys, Loot Crate is where it's at. You guys should hit me up on social media at Arthur Arkish if you want to talk about the crates that you are currently awaiting. It's a lot of fun. Again, it is the best surprise you know is coming. So thank you to our awesome sponsor, Loot Crate. And our next guest on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, he's really not a guest at all. He's an old friend, and you guys will be familiar with my pal Kevin Fishbane. We're staying in our very own backyard to preview. No, hold on, let me try that again. I'm sorry. Coming down in 3, 2, 1. Up next on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, it is a friend of the show. You guys will recognize his voice. It's my pal Kevin Fishbane. That's right, we're staying in our very own backyard to take a look at the Chicago Bears offseason. Kevin, has there been enough action and confusion and weird twists and turns in this Bears offseason for you?
It certainly has. It's been a lot of hubbub, to give a shout out to Hub.
I see what you did.
About a team that still, frankly, is going to be predicted by everyone to finish last in division, and you know is going to probably have another top 10 pick next year. So you, I mean, you step back and you look at, I mean, they made more free agent acquisitions than any team in the league,
right.
And obviously they made the biggest move of the first night in the draft. And then you step back, you look at the roster, you break everything down, you're like, well, this is still a third or fourth place team, you know. So it's kind of a weird offseason in that way.
Yeah, no doubt. Does it tell you, Kevin, that perhaps Ryan Pace and John Fox are kind of, it feels like there's an inverse relationship between sort of the comfort level that each of these, you know, these men, these decision makers for the Bears should feel entering year three. Is that an accurate read on this?
I think so. You know, look, I wasn't in the war room, obviously, when they made the Trubisky move, but as I've talked to people and you say, look, you look at that pick, you look at all the picks, and that's not a head coach's draft. You know, that's a general manager's draft.
Right.
That's not a draft that John Fox and Vic Fangio had to have been really excited about. I mean, they'll say otherwise, but, you know, why would they be thrilled about using premium picks on guys that aren't ready to play?
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, we'll never know for sure what John Fox necessarily thinks about Ryan Pace's plan. Certainly Ryan Pace has to feel more comfortable and secure in his role than John Fox, just the way the position is. The McCaskies are giving Ryan Pace the time he needs. But, you know, I don't know if I wouldn't go as far as saying there's any, you know, certainly any infighting there. I just think that this is Ryan Pace's roster. It's Ryan Pace's team. And it's John Fox's job to try to coach them as many victories as they can.
Is that a reasonable, though, metric, Kevin, to kind of gauge John Fox on this season, is wins and losses, if we both just acknowledge that there hasn't been a lot of instant help? I guess I'm struggling to grasp how we're going to be able to accurately assess if John Fox has this team heading in the right direction just from a coaching staff perspective.
Well, it's going to be kind of funny, Arthur, because if they go 6-10, that's a mm-hmm. three-win improvement. Most
right.
most coaches would kill for a three-win improvement year after year.
Right.
I remember, you know, months ago, I was asked on a show, you know, put me on the spot, predict the record, and I think I just blurted out, I don't know, maybe 7-9, 8-8. And they looked at me like, that's a five-win improvement. And you kind of look like, wow. And you remember, like, 3-13 was really, really bad. You know, the only one way to go up from there, and that's up. So it'll be interesting to see how the Bears view the season, because, you know, I think 6-10 is not necessarily a good mark, but then John Fox can spin and say, hey, we're 3 wins better than we were last year.
Right.
So look, this coaching staff has been very adamant that if they were healthy last year, they would have been better. And if this defense, specifically the front seven, stays healthy, there's something there. I mean, there's talent in that front seven for sure. And we know that they have the mastermind of all masterminds in Vic Fangio coaching them. And they have, you know, one of the best interior offensive lines in the league. They have a very good running back. So there are reasons to think this team should be able to squeak out some victories. You know, the question now is to see, as you said, how do you measure that? I think it sounds weird, but I think you got to get to 7. I think you get to 7-9. You know, then you can say, okay, we're 1 win away from 500. We're 2 wins away from the wild card. Next year will be the year. So maybe that could be the low threshold for John Fox to try to hit.
Okay, and I'll say, I mean, I'll just kind of echo what you just said. If he is able to coax a 4-win improvement and get to 7-9 with this group, I think he would absolutely deserve to stay. It'd be a pretty miraculous job. Kevin, before we talk about not necessarily the improvements, but just kind of the playmakers in the front seven and how certainly John Fox and Vic Fangio are hoping they're going to make the rest of that defense look better, and it's the same story with Jordan Howard and in an inexperienced quarterback situation, What about that quarterback situation? It's your doppelganger, Mike Glennon. You should know him better than anyone. What's just kind of your read on how that dynamic is going to play out? There was a report, I think the Chicago Tribune had, saying Mike Glennon was not exactly thrilled about this Mitch Trubisky move.
Yeah, I mean, you can't blame him, certainly.
Absolutely not, yep.
But on the other hand, when you get a contract where most of the guaranteed money's in the first year, you can't really have lofty expectations of being a franchise quarterback. Right. So he had to understand about the contract. Look, and people have said this too, he's making whatever, $14.5 million to be the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears. You know, there are worse things in life than that. But so you could definitely see, you know, you could see why he would be bummed, but you can also step back and be like, well, he's still in a pretty good situation. And I think that the Bears essentially, I'll use a John Fox metaphor, Arthur, because we all love Foxy's metaphors. He always talks about chopping wood, right? So they take their axe, they take a giant swing at quarterback with Mike Glennon, tree doesn't fall. Here comes a chance to get someone they believe could be a franchise quarterback, so they're going to take another chop at that big tree. And, you know, so they've given themselves two options to bring down this tree. And you know, if Glennon flops, they move to Trubisky. If Glennon's good, they're in a really good spot. If you know, if Trubisky flops and Glennon flops, they're all fired and they start over. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. I mean, that Ryan Pace is, you know, is banking on at least one of these guys being able to put this team back in playoff contention. And if not, they'll have a top five pick again in 2019 and they'll be starting over.
As long as John Fox doesn't bring an actual axe into the locker room. I think it was the old Jack Del Rio Jaguars where there was an actual prop and an injury occurred, I believe, to a kicker with that old chopping the wood adage. Kevin, are the Bears kind of throwing Mike Glennon to the wolves a little bit, though? When you look at what he's surrounded by, the offensive line is solid. He has a Pro Bowl running back. Are there enough pieces for him to come in and quickly be successful, do you think?
Well, I think the nice thing, as you mentioned, is that offensive line. I think when you have two Pro Bowlers in Long and Sitton, you have a guy in Cody Whitehair who I think could certainly be a Pro Bowl caliber player this year. Regardless of what we all say about their offensive tackles, they like Charles Leno more than any, you know, most observers do. Mm-hmm. They looked for upgrades for Bobby Massey, but I think he has a good offensive line. He has a good running game. He is capable receivers. He doesn't have a number one, but he's got capable guys. So it could be worse, certainly, for Glennon. And I think if you go back, and I know you've done this, I've done this, if you look at the Bucs team that was around Glennon in 2013, 2014, you could see that this one probably has got some more talent on the roster. And I think every quarterback's best friend is a good offensive line and a good running game. So there's going to be a lot of attention on Dow Loggins and what kind of play calling he's going to have to kind of continue to try to put Glennon in a good spot.
Right, and we were told that Dow Loggins, you know, was kind of inheriting John Fox and Adam Gase's system, and it was going to be run heavy and quarterback friendly. It wasn't really that, in all honesty, in 2016. So we'll see if he's able to kind of make adjustments with kind of the changes that have occurred this offseason, and certainly that'll be interesting. It is also interesting to me, Kevin, that you've got these two quarterbacks, and neither one of them has played a lot of football. How do you think they divvy up the reps in practice? I mean, I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic of this whole thing. Glennon's going to have some rust to knock off, but obviously it's of the utmost importance that you're trying to develop your future franchise guy behind the scenes. Is that one more kind of kind of hurdle that this coaching staff's going to have to find a way to clear?
Yeah, it's going to be weird. Rookie minicamps this weekend, and you know, I'm sure the Bears have another quarterback just to divvy it up, but I wouldn't bring anybody else in. I'd have Mitch Trubisky take 200 reps a day, yeah, you know, to just continue, just get used to it. But, you know, that's going to be big in training camp. We've seen coaches before have, you know, multiple, you know, the first team on one field, the second team on another field, things like that. You know, anything they can do to get him the extra reps. But, you know, I still believe that, you know, let's say Mike Glennon goes, you know, gets hurt in the middle of a game of week four. You don't want to go to Trubisky. I think you want to go to Mark Sanchez or if Connor Shaw somehow beats Sanchez out for that backup job. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going into the season thinking Mr. Trubisky's the number three quarterback, which gives him even fewer reps. It's going to be so key for the Bears to take advantage of these offseason practices and find creative ways to get Trubisky as many reps as he can while making sure Glennon is comfortable with the first team offense. Because yeah, once the season starts, John Fox, they need to win games, and by winning games, they're going to be giving Glennon as many reps as possible in practice.
Sure. Kevin, you mentioned kind of the best case scenario for the Bears this year. You know, maybe it's 7-9, but more so than the record, it's Glennon, you know, going out there and balling out and potentially, I would think, positioning the Bears to be maybe where the Eagles were last offseason. Yes, that's contingent on a kind of an unprecedented injury, perhaps, if it's going to go all the way to September. But do you think maybe that's what they're thinking in the back of their heads now that we've got these two guys? If Glennon succeeds, maybe kind of a good problem to have at quarterback, where it seems like the Bears have had mostly bad problems over the past decade?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the ideal. I mean, look, the best case scenario, Arthur, is Trubisky lights it up in the preseason. They feel really good about him. Glennon has a good year, gets them to a quality record. And then I think you would probably keep Glennon for one more year and see if you can get them to the playoffs, and then you trade him with the final year on his contract. Or you trade Trubisky if you think Glennon is just an incredible quarterback, and you're fine moving on from, and you're in playoff contention, you're fine moving on from Trubisky. I mean, look, the Patriots have moved on from guys in the past as Brady's continued to be so good, and that's the dream scenario. The Patriots are what teams strive to be, and we saw what happened with them this year, and the teams that wanted Jimmy Garoppolo, and you know, maybe in a year or two, teams are going to want Jacoby Brissett. Teams wanted Matt Cassel. Teams wanted Ryan Mallett. Obviously, that didn't work out. Right. But that is the dream, is figuring out a way that you can get both of these guys good, so then you can get a draft pick back for one of them. That would be certainly the ideal scenario.
And of course, it was Ryan Pace in his introductory press conference who mentioned Ron Wolf. And yes, it took him into the third draft to go get that quarterback. And it's been a little more unorthodox, the approach he's taken. But yes, he's certainly hoping to be able to leverage one of these quarterbacks down the road. Kevin, looking at the defense, I guess it all starts with the health, I think, in the front seven of Leonard Floyd and Pernell McPhee. You tell me if I'm wrong, because there weren't, there was a lot of numbers brought in terms of the secondary, but I don't know about early on difference makers. Do you think Vic is hoping that with more consistent disruption up front from healthy guys, maybe that will be what forces quarterbacks into mistakes, and then his inexperienced guys on the back end can capitalize?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look back at Vic Fangio's teams in San Francisco that were so successful, I mean, I can't recall, maybe you can help me with this, how many Pro Bowl defensive backs they had. I mean, when you think of those teams, you think of Navarro Bowman, you think of Patrick Willis, you think of Justin Smith, you think of Alden Smith, you think of the pass rushers. I mean, they had quality defensive backs, certainly. I'm calling up the 2014, was that team good, 2014 49ers, or was it 2013 one? 2013 team was better.
Yep.
So if you
yep.
look at 2013, you know, Eric Reed was a first-round pick that wasn't great. Dante Whitner, you know, Tremaine Brock, Terrell Brown, Carlos Rogers. I mean, these were the defensive backs. You know, Tremaine Brock had 5 interceptions that year. I don't know if Tremaine Brock made a Pro Bowl. I don't think of Tremaine Brock when I think about the top 30 best corners in the league. Right. So maybe this is a little bit of an insight into Vic Fangio, how he wants to build a defense. And then again, you look at the team and Willis and Ahmad Brooks and Navarro Bowman, and the list goes on and on. So they're hoping that you know, McPhee and Floyd and Goldman, and if Dane Trevathan gets healthy, and Jarrell Freeman, those guys can be that front seven, and then creates opportunities for the back end. But you're right, it's all about the health for Leonard Floyd. I actually, in our Pro Football Weekly magazine, Arthur, I picked Leonard Floyd as the defensive MVP for this team. I mean, if that guy plays 14, 15 games, he should get double-digit sacks. You would think that guy is primed for a second-year jump. And really, you look at his injuries, some of it was conditioning early on. That should be fixed. Then the concussion thing was a technique issue with the way he was tackling. You would think that'll get fixed too. So, I mean, there's a possibility this guy can play, you know, close to a full season and put up some big numbers if he doesn't take a step back.
Yeah, it's a great point. And before we talk about Floyd for another minute, Kevin just pointed out that when you had guys like Deshaun Goldson and Carlos Rogers and Dante Whitner, I think that's an interesting parallel, because they were fairly decent pedigree guys when they came in, but it was Vic Fangio and Ed Donatell who kind of brought out the next level in their play. So when I think about veterans who maybe have some untapped potential, whether it's Marcus Cooper, Prince Amakamura, probably more so than a Quinton Demps type, you kind of wonder if maybe they're going to be able to perform a similar type of job. No, it's not Stephon Gilmore and Marshawn Lattimore, which I'm sure was some people's kind of pipe dream a couple months ago about remaking the secondary, but it's a very interesting point by you. With Leonard Floyd, you mentioned the health and the concussions was a scary, obviously, development in his rookie season. But we have to remember, Vic was often lamenting his inability to get that first full offseason dating back to his first Bourbonnais. So do you think it's about kind of hitting the ground running and not only overcoming the concussions, but maybe some of the nagging things that seemed to frustrate the Bears coaches a little bit early on?
Yeah, I mean, the first practice in training camp, Leonard right. Floyd was taken off on a cart. So, yeah, I mean, that's going to be the big thing, is he can't afford those kind of injuries. He needs tons of reps. He needs to continue to kind of hone his pass rush skills and get used to kind of what other teams are going to be throwing at him. And again, look, the nice thing for Leonard Floyd is he's going to be pass rushing opposite a guy like Willie Young who can get after. And Pernell McPhee hopes that losing 25 pounds will make him more able to play close to a full season. Lamar Houston, as of now, is still on the roster. He led the team in sacks 2 years ago. So, you know, they're going to have options that don't put all the pressure on Leonard Floyd. But you're right. I mean, it's all about him staying in the field and getting those reps.
Well, we got to go back. I think this is a natural progression. We're talking defense, but I have to go back to the 2015 first rounder, of course, Kevin White. He has a new number. Is there reason to believe that maybe the light bulb goes on? I guess the best way to question this, Kevin, because the best way to phrase this, because we don't know what's going to happen with his health. What strides did you see throughout those four games before the unfortunate broken leg that sent him to IR for a second straight season?
Well, I think the play that the Bears talk about a lot, and you know, I've talked about, is that play in Dallas. You know, down the right sideline, big, you know, go up and get it catch on a made a big play. You know, 25-30 yard play. Yep. You go to the next week against Detroit. He was having what was his best game. He was, you know, putting up a lot of catches and showing the good route running, and then the injury happened. So you've seen a little bit of flashes. I mean, I think expectation-wise, Arthur, I think you have to be realistic about the physical abilities. I mean, you cannot expect this guy to be a 4-3 guy who's going to be up below top off the defenses anymore. You just can't. There's no reason to expect that. You can't do it. It's not fair to him. I think a fair expectation level is to wonder what his mental state is going to be in terms of knowing the playbook, which was an issue early on last season. And making sure that he is over all those mental hurdles about, you know, because he's coming off two surgeries now. So I think that's where it's at. I think everyone should just temper all physical expectations, hope that he stays healthy, hope that he gets the playbook, he's on the same page as Glennon, and he's not thinking about his leg when he's running these routes, because, I mean, you see what he is capable of. I just don't know if we're ever going to see that speed that Ryan Pace saw in 2015.
Right. I think you're absolutely right on, and that would be an ideal scenario, but I think, unfortunately, with Alshon departing, it's going to be hard for Bears fans to temper those expectations, because there's only one guy on this roster who looks like he's got prototype number one skills, and I love Cameron Meredith as a compliment, but I think that maybe is going to make things tough for Kevin White. Yes, they did bring in Kendall Wright and Marcus Wheaton, and maybe this is a good segue. Actually, I'm going to ask you about your fantasy nugget last, Kevin, but I got a couple other quick questions I'm going to ask all 32 beat writers. What's the most improved unit on this team after, again, this kind of crazy offseason we've just kind of went through?
Yeah, man, Arthur, that's a really tough one, because you look around and you're like, none?
Yeah.
I think if I had to pick one, I'd probably say tight end, mm-hmm. because last year they had Zach Miller and really nobody. You know, Logan Paulson, you know, undrafted rookie Ben Broniker, a first-year guy, and Daniel Brown. And this guy showed flashes, but nothing. You know, right now, Zach Miller is still on the roster, and, you know, we've seen what he can do when he's healthy. You bring in Deion Sims, who is an ascending guy in Miami. Adam Gase really wanted to keep Sims in Miami. And then you use a second-round pick on Adam Shaheen, and say what you will about the fact that he played Division II football, but the Bears see something they like in him. So a second-round pick, a free agent guy, someone in Zach Miller who's, you know, accomplished enough in 2 years that you know what he's capable of, and you still have Broniker, and you still have Daniel Brown, you still have Michael Pruitt, you know, former Viking on the team. So they have more options, I think, at that position. And so many the past years, even Martellus Bennett was here, they just struggled so much to find guys at that spot. So it's not a sexy position. It's not like they've, you know, they have Pro Bowlers there right now, but they have three guys that are all, you know, they expect Shaheen to be starter caliber one day. So right. If I'm going to use that, I'm going to say they have three starter caliber tight ends, which is two more than they've had for the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. And I'll tell you what, at least physically, they're going to be imposing when you talk about Shaheen and Sims. They're going to look really good getting off the bus. I was joking on Twitter last night. And on the flip side of it, Kevin, and I'm sure it won't be easier to answer. It's not easy to explain this offseason in general, but what's the biggest remaining flaw? What position jumps out at you is kind of a potential red flag still?
Man, that's a great question, Arthur. I look at the safety position because that's the one we've talked about for decades in Chicago, you know, since Mike Brown was here. And I liked the Quentin Demp signing, but, you know, that's someone at the tail end of his career. And then you have the conglomerate of Adrian Amos, Deion Bush, Harold Jones, Corte, and a fourth-round pick, Eddie Jackson's got a rod in his leg. That is interesting. That's kind of what they're going with to start opposite Demps. And again, I like the Demp signing. I think it makes sense. I think they need a leader back there, a veteran in the secondary. But you still don't have a surefire, you know, ball hawking guy that can be around for 5-10 years at that spot. So, you know, I still have questions about, you know, safety. I think the secondary as a whole. I know a lot of people are going to say wide receiver, but I actually almost said wide receiver for my most improved unit, Arthur. And here's why. It's the bottom of the wide receiver depth chart is much improved, I think, compared. You know, I know they lost Alshon. I get that. But if you look at the fact that their number three and number four receivers as of now are Marcus Wheaton and Kendall Wright, both guys who have shown flashes and accomplished things in this league, I think that's still a big jump from what they had at the three and four spots the last few years. You know, again, you're kind of taking a chance there, and they still don't have a number one. But I wouldn't be as down on the receiver spot as I think other people can be.
Okay, yeah, you've got the Kendall Wright connection. He reunites with Dowell Loggins. He's presumably going to give the Bears a slot option because I don't think any of us think Eddie Royal's still going to be on the roster. You've got Marcus Wheaton who can potentially bring the speed element that's been missing. I'm guessing this is the proper segue, but what about a fantasy nugget, a fantasy sleeper? Kevin, this is my last one for you. Is there one wide receiver that jumps out more than the rest, or maybe someone from the tight end or running back group? Is there someone that fantasy players should have their eye on?
Well, if you follow the money, the Bears have high expectations for Marcus Wheaton. I mean, I believe he's getting $4 million this year. So, you know, he's somebody that's a big play threat. And, you know, if I think he's going to be, he's not going to be. I mean, we didn't even have him in our fantasy draft magazine, I don't think, out of 90 receivers. So I would look at him as a sleeper. I mean, obviously, Jordan Howard is the only really guy on the Bears that you can start on your fantasy team. But keep an eye on tight end position. I talked about it earlier. You know, if Deion Sims really emerges, I mean, they're paying him $6 million this year, and he started to get more and more looks as a receiving guy last year. They really think they are getting somebody who is on the way up in terms of his talents, and he's not going to be getting 30-yard catches like Gronk up the middle. But he, you know, so someone's going to emerge to that tight end position, whether it's him or Zach Miller or Adam Shaheen, and none of them are going to be in the top 15 fantasy tight ends. So that's something for fantasy owners to monitor in the preseason, which of those tight ends kind of emerges as the guy.
All right, very good stuff. That's my guy, Kevin Fishbane, and he's your guys too. He's a people person. Head to Twitter if you're not already following him, at KFishbane. Make sure you're checking out all his work at ProFootballWeekly.com and certainly for the Bears-specific stuff, throw a / Bears on there. Kevin, have fun out at the rookie minicamp this weekend, and thank you for agreeing to do this. It's been a while since we've done the pod together. I had a lot of fun.
Oh, it was an absolute blast. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is Kevin Fishbane on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. All right, and that's going to do it for the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Two off-season recaps down, 30 more to go. I hope you guys enjoyed hearing about the Browns today from Mary Kay Cabot and the Bears from Kevin Fishbane. A huge thank you one more time to those two for making time for us. Also need to thank Loot Crate, our awesome sponsor. Make sure you go get your crate now. And I forgot to remind you at the top of the show. So before we get out of here, if you liked what you heard today, please head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We'd love it if you left us a review and a rating while you're over there. And again, this is going to be a weekly thing going all around the NFL and taking a look at every team. So make sure you're back with us next week. I am your host, Arthur Arkish. And of course, the biggest thank you of all goes to you guys for being with us on the program. Look forward to chatting again next week, and take care.